The opinions and statements expressed in the following program do not necessarily reflect those of WWDB, its staff, or management.
I am your future.
Isn't it about time for a change?
We are national leaders.
AmericanWorkersRadio.com.
You're listening to American Workers Radio, a national network promoting American-made products with your host, Michael Blihash.
Well, welcome once again to another edition of American Workers Radio here on 860 AM, serving the tri-state area of southeastern Pennsylvania, the state of New Jersey, and northern Delaware. And of course, you can tune in from anywhere in the United States or around the world simply by logging on to AmericanWorkersRadio.com. It's really unbelievable how we've become so close together through this internet, through Facebook, and through everything else. It is important that we gather as many people interested in our efforts to make sure that the Buy American Made campaign is number one. Well, I'd like to ask that you contact family and friends and invite them to tune in. If they live in our broadcast area, that you'll know that yourself, give them a call, let them know, text them, email them, whatever, and let them know to tune in. We're going to have some very interesting conversation today. And also, I want to ask that you continue to spread the word about the programs that we rebroadcast on the internet site and that we will be sending out again as we do each and every Wednesday after the program. Do send that out to family and friends. We get a lot of new friends as a result of that. As you know, we like to talk common sense issues. And I want to first of all say thank you to some very important people to our process, and they are Mark Andel, who is the founder of the Made in America store, and I encourage you to check him out on the front page of AmericanWorkersRadio.com. It goes right to the Made in America store, and also Mark has a radio broadcast that you can click on and listen to rebroadcast. He does that show every week, and I think he is another soldier in the field. Larkin Conley, our national small business advocate, always there to help us get some common sense ideas back on the table, back in line. You know, as we say, the scale has to be tipped in both directions. Rich Loges, who is the principal of RJL Technology Integration, always there to ask the questions and, of course, check up on certain things, which I may ask him to do during the broadcast today. Our engineer is Henry Chaplinsky, and I am Michael Blihash. I can't thank you enough for all that you do to spread our message. First of all, I want to say thank you to Jason Kilmeyer, who joined us last Wednesday. I received a lot of very good responses from him being on the broadcast a few times, and you can hear last Wednesday's broadcast simply by logging on to AmericanWorkersRadio.com and click on the Listen Anytime link, and it'll go to a list of all past broadcasts, including those of our guests today. Now, as every one of us knows, time waits for no one. And we also know that the clock only goes in one direction, and I mean one direction. Just take a look today in the mirror, and you'll say, I understand. You'll remember yourself in the 5th grade, 10th grade, and today, and you'll say, wow, clock really does go in one direction. Today, I'm going to be asking everyone to focus on what happened in the last 18 months as inflation caused all of us, personally, and every American, a lot of stress and a lot of waste of our hard-earned dollars. I also want to ask if there's a way that we can avoid the difficulties we've been experiencing in this country today because of improper leadership. Very, very sad to say that leadership in this country, both Democrats and Republicans, very pitiful. Now, to help us discuss our issues today, we have a special guest. His name is Daniel Turner, and Daniel is the founder and executive director of Power of the Future, also referred to as PTF. And I'm going to ask Daniel a few questions today because he is an expert. For almost 20 years, he's worked in communications and public affairs for several nonprofits. He started Power the Future to advocate for rural energy communities in the Power Center of Washington, D.C. And he really looks out for people and knows what he's talking about. Daniel's an expert in energy and environmental issues, the United States economy, international affairs, and our national security. Daniel appeared recently on many shows, but he appeared on a show of someone that I know, Rich Zeoli, who is really a very interesting person, does a great show, and he's a regular guest, Daniel Turner, on Fox News, Fox Business, Newsmax, and over 1,000 radio programs. Without further ado, I'd like to welcome Dan Turner back to our broadcast. Dan, tell us everything.
First of all, I will tell you it is a privilege to be back on your show. Love coming on and love the conversation we have. So thank you for inviting me back.
We're very happy to have you. Daniel, we've discussed in the past America's national elected leaders. They allowed gas and energy prices to rise because they did nothing. They did absolutely nothing. And they never speak about the fact that in America, we have 1%, a little over 1% of the cars and trucks, in fact, not only in America, but in the world, able to use electric batteries. 98%+ require gas and other fossil fuels at this time to keep their cars moving. And yet, today again, they said, oh, in California, they're going to cut back. They're stopping all new gas stations opening and all this rigmarole. So I don't understand. We went through 18 months of total hell. If you were the person in charge, what would you have advised for them to do?
Yeah, that's a great question, and it's the one I get asked the most about. I actually have an op-ed in The Spectator that I think came out today, literally on this exact same topic. And sadly, the answer to that question is not a policy prescription. It's not a changing of the law or a changing of regulation. The answer to that question is a changing of beliefs. And I don't think Joe Biden is going to change his beliefs. What I mean by that is the current administration, they believe in the power of government. They believe that they have the answers. They believe that they know what is best. They are deeply skeptical of the free markets. They're deeply skeptical of freedom in general. And they're quite frankly afraid of it. I think often more and more they like to call themselves, radicals, and we call them radicals. Oh, you're a bunch of radicals. But really, when you think about it, there's nothing radical about being a statist. For the history of mankind on this earth, we've been controlled by a pharaoh, a Caesar, a king, a landowner, someone. Someone's always been in control of us. So freedom is really the radical position to say that free people know what to do best and free markets know what to do best. So the problem with our energy crisis, and again, we can get down to specific prescriptions that I'm happy to, but I think to begin the conversation, it's really understanding this philosophical fundamental difference. When you believe in freedom and free markets, you believe that without government coercion, without government calling the shots, the free markets will create a better product at a better price point, a lower price point, for the greatest number of people in the most efficient way possible, and it will flourish. And that's what we saw in the energy space in the previous administration. That's what we saw in 2017-18, and then it culminated really in 2019. If you are a statist, like Joe Biden is a statist, and most of the elected Democrats are statists, you are constantly telling the American people, oh, the big bad free market, they're going to pollute, they collude to raise prices, they price gouge, they have this secret phone call, they get together and they determine they're going to raise prices at the pump because they're greedy. But really, the evidence shows the opposite. When we were given the freedom in the energy industry, when we were given the freedom to operate, we created more energy for less money, for a lower price point, for the greatest number of people in the most efficient way possible. And it flourished, and the economy flourished. 2019 wasn't just the banner year for energy. It was the banner year for retail. It was a banner year for restaurants and dining out. It was a banner year for hotel and travel because cheap energy made life inexpensive. It brought about abundance and prosperity. But if you don't believe in freedom, that scares the crap out of you. You believe government knows best. And Joe Biden, at his core, and we know this after him being in D.C. since 1972, Joe Biden, at his core, is a government believer. He's a statist. He thinks he and his people decide what is best and what works and what doesn't. And we're all suffering the consequences of that philosophical belief.
I can't agree with you more. This is very unfortunate. And, you know, the national news media just seems to play games with everything that's taking place in the United States. You have to really, you know, you were just on Rich's show last week. You know, you're able to speak on the topic, what's on your mind on broadcasts like this. And Rich has a huge audience all over the place. And this is a very good idea when he brings on people like yourself to, you know, talk about common sense. The thing that I have proposed, as you know, you were on a few times before, I said when Joe Biden signed that executive order, I suggested that members of the House and the Senate put in a new piece of legislation that would end the presidential executive order. Now, they could have done that 10 minutes or 10 days, but not all these months. We're talking 18 months past history. That could have been called whatever they wanted to call it. Now, that, according to the Constitution, is something that's very legitimate to do. No national leaders, no Democrats, no Republicans came forward to offer such a piece of legislation. And by the way, for the record, for everybody's knowledge, the United States Constitution places executive powers in the hands of the president. They make him the commander in chief. And that requires that the president shall take care of the laws and that they all be faithfully executed. However, laws are also given additional powers to the president and also to the House and Senate. The president has additional powers in the act of war or something like that. But the Senate also has powers to present legislation that could invalidate something that they feel is not going to benefit the American people or America's economy. Of course, if they did propose an emergency act or we have to restore all energy or we want to keep all the energy moving as it has been in the last 5 or 10 years in the United States, have continued the Keystone Pipeline, everything as it was, that the president would probably override it. He would probably veto it, but it could be overridden by 2/3 of the majority of elected people in the Congress. None of that was done. And, you know, I often hear people say, did the president think that there would be no reaction to this? There's been really no reaction from Congress. For all we know, President Biden may have welcomed such congressional action and nothing happened. How do you see this campaign that could have stopped this a couple days after the president signed that legislation? The bottom line is the Congress could have introduced legislation. We want to keep everything the way it is. It's not against what the president's executive order is. It just nullifies it because they, the elected leaders of this country, should have seen way in advance that this would turn into a inflation nightmare. And how do you tell people to go out and buy electric cars when there's a small percentage of them available? What would you do to advise them to introduce such a piece of legislation?
Well, I'm hoping that they don't want to fire all their bullets unnecessarily, and they're saying, look, this legislation wouldn't go anywhere because we don't control either House or the or either chambers of Congress, and they'll do something next year. But I don't also want to put all of my eggs in that basket because I don't think Republicans are necessarily the solution. Quite frankly, a lot of times Republicans are just as guilty. I look at the great state of Texas and their ongoing energy crunch. Texas is a thoroughly Republican-led, managed state, and they've made as bad energy decisions as California has, which is as blue as they get. So there is bipartisan stupidity when it comes to the energy decision. But at the national level, I do hope that in January we see some action in the House and in the Senate towards that effect. Maybe they're keeping their powder dry. But I'm not, you know, I can't bank on that. Even if they do anything at the congressional level, sadly, a lot of our policies are controlled by the executive branch. And to quote Barack Obama, elections have consequences, right? Elections matter. And the wrong party, when it comes to this issue, won. And they're calling the shots. Congress can make some things happen. But ultimately, Deb Haaland is the Secretary of the Interior. And, you know, Deb Haaland could probably walk down the block right now and no one would recognize her. We're not a super civically informed nation. Everyone knows who the president is and the first lady is. Everyone knows that Jennifer Lopez and Ben Affleck got married a couple days ago. But no one really knows what Deb Haaland does or who she is. And that's tragic, because the majority of the energy policies that are crushing this industry are decided by her and her team and her office. And she's a very, very powerful woman. And she's genuinely hates the energy industry. I mean, she hates progress. She hates the West. She's a very aggrieved, angry individual. She hates Western civilization. And yet she's the energy secretary. And yet Republicans introduced her and said, this is my good friend. Let's put bygones aside and come together for the good of the country. And let me introduce my dear esteemed friend. Republicans did that. May he rest in peace, Don Young, longest Republican member of the House ever. He was the one who championed Deb Haaland. Why? Someone asked Don Young that question, because Deb Haaland said, when I become Secretary of the Interior, I am going to crush you. And Don Young specifically, and I hate to do this to the great state of Alaska, a place where I spend a lot of time and where I'm going again in just 2 weeks, she targeted specifically Alaska. I'm going to destroy the oil and gas industry in your state. And what has she done? Exactly that.
Exactly.
Millions of acres removed from Alaska. Why? Because that's what she said she was going to do. And we're surprised. So we've got a lot of problems. Energy is a huge issue. But the lack of civic understanding and the lack of engagement of the American people is as big a threat.
You know, you're absolutely the lack of engagement. If you know how many people contact me and a few others in the industry, they say, you say it, you do it, you make the call. No one wants to seem to put their name to it. My sad commentary has been many times is that we have 535 people in the United States Congress. And back in January of 2021, not one of those people try to offer a piece of legislation that would not allow that executive order to go into effect, but allow all of the energy exploration and everything that was going on, the Keystone Pipeline, to go forward until we come up with a true path to what we're going to be able to do. 1% of the cars with electricity possibilities is not going to do the trick. When we have big amounts of cars in this United States that is divided up among 320, or how many it's about 290 million people have driver's license in America. So we have a lot of, we have 330 million people, but a lot of them have driver's license. Where are the rest of them going to get their fuel? Where are they going to have peace, be able to go to work? You know, all this inflation has really hurt the American people more than the 535 people in the House of Representatives and the Senate realize. I work in human services, so I see exactly what is going on. People have to eat. People have to go to restaurants, or they have to go to stores to pick up stuff. They have to take their kids to school. They can't be paying double for going 20 miles in a car. Double the amount of gas. If the government said, look, we have this wonderful solution and we're going to help everybody to get to it, we'll be able to achieve it in a year. Well, then we could say, hey, okay, we can agree. But when they're talking now that this is 30 and 35 years out, before we even get 50% of the cars on the road that are electric, it doesn't make any sense to me. I'd like to see this discussion in the midterm election, which is going to be coming up very soon because the election is in November, and they better start talking about all this now. I'd like to see if there are people on both sides that would say, I'd like to introduce legislation that is going to nullify anything of the past and go back to a situation where we are in charge of our own energy. We, the United States of America.
And having a robust conversation about these issues does not make you a denier. It doesn't make you a disinformer or a misinformer. But that's how we're labeled, right? That's how the response to these conversations happens. And these are important conversations. Look, Germany is sending out another warning today to its citizens to reduce their electricity. The grid can't sustain. And you look at Germany and you say, for 20 years now, you've been pushing a green agenda. This is a perfect case study. 20 years, you've been pushing the green agenda. You've spent close to $500 billion, close to $600 billion U.S. dollars they have spent on wind capacity. Right? Their emissions have more than doubled in that same timeline, and the average German citizen is paying more than five times what they were paying since this initiative began. Mm-hmm. My question for Germany and for the American people is, when does green energy work? Right after $500 billion, we have more emissions, and we have five times the price of electricity. When does the green energy do its damn job? Because we're doing it for the planet, but we're emitting more. We're doing it because people like Kamala Harris and Joe Biden keep telling us the wind is free, but we're paying five times as much. So when do we start seeing it and saying, wow, this is great. I'm glad we're doing this, because as of now, it's been a 20-year disaster. Yes. What is Germany doing? We need to invest more in green energy. What is America doing? We need to look at Europe. John Kerry is in Germany right now telling us we need to follow Europe's example and invest in green energy. These are the people who tell us to follow the science. Well, the science says this is a total failure. When do I start to see some success? But if you raise that up, though, they're going to tell you you're a denier, you're a threat, you're a misinformer, and that's how they silence their opposition.
You know, Daniel, if Mr. Curry went over to Europe to have this discussion for 3 days, my argument with why bring all these people from other parts of the world, all these airplanes have to have, you know, all this fuel to bring. Why could they do it on the high-quality Zoom systems they have now? What's the purpose of them all traveling there, worrying about wasting energy? I believe that is a waste of energy, because you and I won't hear anything about it. I'm not picking on Democrats or Republicans. I want them all to work together to do something to stop this inflation hell that all of us have been going on, you know, with for 18 months. And they have to work together and do something realistic. My suggestion is, before I turn to Mark Indel, is you would be a person they should bring into the House and Senate to discuss the energy issues to help push their new legislation. I'd like to see a lot of the people running for office, both Democrats and Republicans, talk about how we have to restore energy drilling and all in the United States and get it to a point where we are working to go to the new green systems, but also be realistic and cost effective at what we're trying to do to keep America great as we knew it prior to 18 months ago. Mark, can you welcome our very special guest, Daniel Turner?
Yes. Good morning, Dan. Great to hear from you. You know, you're always got so much positive and so much common sense. My most popular shirt at the Made in America store lately is it's common sense to buy Made in America. But Dan, you make common sense, and looking at your what you do, I believe you're on a farm. You're on a working farm. You live and
yes, sir.
You know, I'm always looking for farm work ethic, so I love it. Like you more and more every time I hear you, and you just make sense. Like you said, you know what? Cheap energy grows the economy. Basically, this administration shut it off. Again, I own General Welding and Fabricating is my parent company, and then Made in America stores are my passion. I love America. General Welding, though, got hit very hard over the last 18, 20 months because we were a sole source provider for a large oil mining company that produces desilters, desanders for large rigs out across the world. And you know, another dynamic, they should be booming because the drum of oil's up and oil's up, and usually they're booming in these tough times, but they're not, because another dynamic was with the Ukraine war, a lot of their customers, and they're based out of Western New York, have been shut off because of the different dealings going on, and they can't sell to certain countries because of what the war has caused in the policies we've put on other countries, which happen to be their countries. So that's a different dynamic. So when we talk about the pipeline, and I'm in the oil mining industry, and, you know, there were the razor blades we replaced on these all the different, oil rigs out there. And it was very good work for a company like mine. And, you know, we're really a large job shop, run about 60, 70 employees and two plants. And it really affected us. So, you know, the trickle-down effect. And then also our military work for Northrop Grumman, we're sole source provider for the Joint Threat Emitter System and the JEDI system. That's been on pause for 18 months, and that doesn't work in my world because I got to meet payroll every Monday. So, you know, so we're reinventing ourselves. So, like you said, very, very tough times. And executive orders just, when they're just cut off at will, really, really does a number on our economy and my hardworking team and other businesses like me, Dan.
Yeah. Yeah, it's devastating. And the executive order is exactly what, as I said in the beginning, what statists like. They like power. They like control. And they're incapable of allowing people to make the right decisions because they are deeply, deeply distrusting. They will tell each other, well, if we let this gentleman run his company, he would pollute everywhere. And they believe that. They think the worst of us. And so they have to control because it's in their nature. It is radical to believe in freedom. It is easy and commonplace and, quite frankly, historically consistent to be an authoritarian. And that's just who these people are. It's what Joe Biden is. It's why, heck, at 2:45 Eastern, I'll be watching live and live tweeting it, and I'm sure we'll put out a press release, but 2:45 Eastern, Joe Biden is going to make his remarks on the climate crisis and new executive powers he's going to exert. Why?
Yeah.
Because he couldn't get the votes in Congress. You know, Michael, you were talking earlier about what legislation. They didn't get any legislation done. And you know what that means for statists? Nothing.
Nothing.
I don't care.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to do it anyway, because why? I'm in charge. And I don't know what section of the Constitution, I'm not a constitutional scholar, it's got to be Article 34, that says when the president declares an emergency, he suddenly has newfound powers, because this is what the president's going to say. I have declared a climate emergency, just like I declared a COVID emergency, and you can't go to church on Sunday because I have said so. Well, what's the climate emergency that Joe Biden is going to declare at 2:45? And what is the power that somehow he will apply to himself? Because I guarantee you, it's going to be an amazing amount of power and money. You're not going to know where the money even came from. But the press secretary yesterday said, well, you know, when he declares an emergency, he finds new pockets or new pools of money. Wow! I didn't know that's how America works. Well, you know what? I declare a middle relief crisis for the New York Yankees. And I think we got to get some money to them because there's a crisis and we need new money pools. So it's just ridiculous.
Yeah, hey, Dan, you know, I've got a welding shop, so I run 24 hours a day, 48,000 square foot, one of my plants. And I've got a lot of guys from around the area, but he's a supervisor in charge of the trailer department, but he's from Arkansas. You know, he moved his family up here about a year ago, but he's been 110, 115 a day for a lot of years. And, you know, all of a sudden it's 101, and I think in Philly today, Mike, you're hitting. But they've been dealing with it forever. But like you said, whatever they're selling on that TV, it's for their agenda, right?
Yes. And, you know, I have to mention this, too, which is really good. And, Dan, hearing you on this radio, on other radio programs, seeing you on various TV shows, I'm getting more and more people, many that are non-union, people that are union, large and small businesses that are employing people, saying that they are being destroyed, utterly destroyed by this inflation. I mean, especially when they put out bids a year ago for something, and then all of a sudden, and the contract is signed, and all of a sudden everything around them goes up. The transportation goes up 40-50%. They're really getting disgusted. Many of them are very, very disgusted with the national leaders. They would have rathered that we discuss this. You remember, Mark and Larkin and Rich, we discussed this on the show in April of 21. We said we have to go to an Emergency Energy Act or some name like that and get the people in Washington. I did make many contacts, and most of the people said, and you'll remember this well, you know, I don't want to do that. That could be a career against my career, a career changer for me. A lot of these people would be out to get me and all if I did anything to go against the president. I said, well, wait a minute. This is not a dictatorship. This is not Hitler or Putin or something like that. We're Americans. We are Americans. We're supposed to work together for the benefit of all Americans. Having an opinion, you should never be destroyed for having an opinion. You should have that opinion, and those that agree, agree, and those that don't. But you should put your opinion forward. I'm hoping that this midterm election, and I'm not telling people to vote Democrat or Republican, I am saying to talk to your candidates and ask them, are they going to do something to restore all energy, drilling, production, et cetera, Keystone Pipeline in America upon their being election and getting into the Congress? That's elected and installed into the Congress. I want to see what they're going to do. The problem is, if you don't ask them now, before the election, they just go into sleeper mode once the election is over. And that's a problem.
Yeah.
You've seen it.
It is. It's a great point for everyone, and especially at the local and state level. I mean, it's very important for Congress, no doubt, and there are things Congress can do. But a lot of the energy crunch that we're experiencing, that terrible example I gave in Germany, you can replicate in a state like Texas, where it is Republicans who bought into the climate lies, who bought into the green energy lies. It's a Republican state that has spent close to $70 billion in wind turbines. They brag about the capacity. It's got capacity for 30,000 megawatts of electricity. Well, it doesn't hit capacity. It hits about 8 or 9%. So what's 8 or 9% of $66 billion? That's a lot of money that to make modern art, because those wind turbines across the Texas plains are just very expensive sculptures. And what's the result? Texans, they did die last year in those terrible storms in February of 2021. And right now, Texans are being told, don't do laundry. They're being told until 8 p.m. They're being told, don't charge your electric vehicle. They're saying, please turn your air conditioner up to 80 degrees because the grid can't sustain. So if we have spent $66 billion in Texas, Republican Texas, what is the great Commonwealth of Pennsylvania going to do, right, if the wrong person gets elected? Look at what California is doing. So you're absolutely right, Michael, that it is an important election. But ask the guy running or the woman running for governor, your county board, and if they say, we're going to make a pledge that by the year 2030, Lackawanna County will be 100% green fired. Nope, you're out, because you're a threat. You're a threat to my family and my business. And if someone says, we are going to say that Philadelphia and all of its wonderful suburbs by the year of Westchester County, by the year 2030, will be 50% renewable energy, gone. You're a threat. You're a threat to my business, my family, my livelihood, my children who need insulin to be refrigerated, my mother who's on a dialysis machine. You are a threat, because I look at Germany, I look at Texas, I look around the world, and I say green energy has failed. It is failing. And if you want to double down on failure, then you are a threat to me and my family, and you have no right to hold elected office, let alone run. That's where your wonderful listeners need to get involved, because yes, they are pushing the green energy lie, and it is costing lives.
You know, Daniel, I have spoken personally. I know many politicians, and some of them, because I know them personally, I don't want to humiliate them. I've mentioned this to Larkin in the past, and, you know, it's disgusting. They just want to hide behind what their caucus would like. I don't want to go against my caucus people. And I say to them, why not? I go against whatever is needed. Why wouldn't you want to say, we need to do this for the well-being of the country? Not for just because the caucus is concerned, you know, some people may not like them or whatever. In every governor's race this time around, in every House and Senate seat, this better be the topic of concern. I don't know what Joe Biden is going to do today at 2:45. I understand he's having some kind of a conference to declare some kind of an additional emergency. But the emergency right now is that we don't have enough fuel to be cost effective here in the United States of America. And until we get to that point, all of our non-union, union, our small businesses, and people wanting to be employed are going to have a little bit of hell. I'm going to turn to Larkin Conley. Larkin, can you welcome Daniel Turner once again?
Hey, Dan, welcome back to the show. It's good to have you.
Thank you.
I love any friends that I have that are from the energy sector, and I have some friends that have been a long time part of the energy sector in this country, as I worked for Gulf Oil and Chevron for 30 years. So you were spot on, Dan, and I think this has got to be recognized right away. I think we need to absolutely emphasize this is not a political show. Truer words can't be spoken. The Dems, as legislators in Washington, D.C., are a train wreck. They're a train wreck. They are hot messes. But so are the Republicans. And as Dan said, and this is very true, in some instances, the Republicans are a bigger train wreck than the Dems.
Amen.
It's a hot mess. It is a hot mess in Washington, D.C. right now. And imagine speaking to anybody that had anything to do with the formation of this country in the early years, telling them the only way a certain party, who, by the way, controls the Congress and is at a 50-50 split in the Senate, can get anything done is by executive order. What does that say about those people as legislators? They stink. They're terrible, absolutely terrible. My lawn is going to have a sign in it pretty soon that says, in very, very bold terms, reelect no one. Not a single person in either one of those legislative bodies has, to me, earned a minuscule amount of money that we've paid them over the years. You know, here's Biden. Biden is, he's a hot mess. He's a train wreck. And I hate to say this. I mean, if my father always said, you don't have something nice to say about somebody, keep your mouth shut. But I can't help in this instance because I think it's very profound. He's not the brightest bulb on the tree, unfortunately. And it creates a struggle for him. First of all, he makes serious mistakes. Do you know that he still has not apologized for Afghanistan? Still hasn't said, well, the military has said we could have done that a hell of a lot differently. But Biden has never, ever, ever admitted that, ever. So he's that Washington politician that has no sense of accountability. You elected me president, I'm the president. I'm supreme at my job. I'm the most powerful man in the world. What I'm going to say goes. And if I can't get legislation through, if I can't negotiate legislation with the opposing party, I'm going to sign executive orders, and that's just a mess. He shut down the pipeline to make a statement. You know that, Dan, as well as I do. That was just a statement, a clear statement about what he was going to do during his presidency. And they've smartly enough abandoned the project in a way that as soon as he gets voted out, somebody can open it back up. Even if they open it up for natural gas, it needs to be reopened. And here's a president, and this is where you really have to understand the individual. Here's a president that every opportunity goes and speaks to unions, praising them that they're the backbone of the country. Now, I'm not about to get into a union discussion. I think a good union is wonderful and responsible for you know, good worker policy. I'm 100% behind a good union. Now, as soon as I see the business manager of the electrical workers, IBEW, in Philadelphia walk up to me in a $1,200 suit, I know something's, you know, kind of out of switch here and isn't kind of working the way it's supposed to. But that's all Biden talks to is union people. So what do we do? I'm going to ask you a question, and I think I know your answer, but I'm going to ask you, Dan, anyway. The legislative body of this country does not work. As far as the Supreme Court is concerned, I think it works. Of course it works. You don't like the ruling, so you're going to change the makeup of the court so that you get your ruling. Then the people who are pro-life are going to be mad. You know, it doesn't make any sense. What do we do? Seriously.
I can tell you one thing we are doing. We haven't rolled it out yet, but we put together a policy paper, a white paper with energy experts and congressional experts, and it's a roadmap that we will roll out to members of Congress, assuming that Republicans take control, because sometimes folks need a little bit of guidance, and sometimes they need to know what to do. And members of Congress are right now in re-election mode. Sadly, the problem with the way our system works is these candidates spend so much effort on winning the election that when it's finally done and they pop all the champagne, they realize that the real work now has to begin. Mm-hmm. And no one wants to do that part. You'd rather just go on the stump speech and shake hands and kiss babies. So we're going to do their work for them to say, okay, you are now the chairman of this committee. Here are a series of things that you can do as chair of this committee, whether it's Senate Energy and Natural Resources, the corresponding committee on the House side. There are steps they can do, and they need a little bit of guidance and they need a little bit of push. So a white paper is very helpful because it's thought leadership and its direction. But B, it's got to be weaponized. And so what we will do as well as we will ask folks running for Congress right now, whether or not they will endorse it. And we'll hold them accountable. And if we find people running, especially from energy states, saying that they don't want to be part of this, well, then why are you running? If you're running for Congress in Colorado and you're not deeply concerned about what's happened to the oil and gas industry there, if you're running for in Alaska, you know, if you're Senator Lisa Murkowski, you talk a very good game about how much you care about oil and gas in the state of Alaska, but you really haven't done much to stop the bad things from happening. In fact, as I mentioned, you voted to confirm Deb Haaland. You said that she would do a wonderful job and she would respect. Well, we all knew this was a lie. I mean, how is this shocking to anybody? And yet we play these congressional games in the name of, oh, getting along and working together and crossing the aisle. So this is exactly what we will continue to do. These are steps that we, Power the Future, are concretely taking. They require effort and resources and work. But this is why I started the organization, and this is something that hopefully we can push people who need to be pushed in the right direction.
Excellent. I want to ask you something, question, very important question that people ask me. It was reported in the media, from what I understand, that America is shipping 800 million barrels of fuel out of America every day. Is that true?
I know we have shipped over 5 million barrels at this point. I don't know if we're still shipping it on a daily basis. That report came out, and I don't think the members of Congress were angry enough at it.
Well, the story is, here we are in need of fuel in our country, and Mr. Biden stopped all of the exploration and all the Keystone Pipeline. He should have said, well, at this time, I'm also going to nullify all the contracts to take fuel out of America to other countries and to save it for the American people, because it's our fuel and we'll save it for us first. But because there were contracts that he couldn't do that with, that's where this problem is. So we're shipping out, and he's going to foreign countries begging them to send us oil. That was foolish. He went over there thinking he's going to get a hit, and he didn't get any hit.
Exactly.
So, Dan, do you want to break the news, or do you want me to break the news?
Yeah, you go ahead.
About current price hikes. You know, the oil industry operates. It's a fungible resource. So they can be feeding South Texas through two massive wells, and one of the wells goes dry. Or they get floods and rains, and they have to slow the refinery down. There are a million different things that increase and lower the price of a gallon of gasoline. It's rather convenient for a non-functioning country politically to say, well, this is Joe Biden's fault. A piece of it is, because so much of the oil industry is confidence in your supply, what you have coming down from downstream. It's all very, 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 very important. But what happens is that they get themselves mentally into a position where they say, Joe Biden's doing something stupid that under normal economic circumstances may not raise the price of gasoline. But it alarms us that we have no future. That you've got 350 million internal combustion engines running in this country, and Joe Biden wants to shut off all the gasoline, or if not shut it off, make whoever operates those vehicles pay, you know, $6 a gallon, which I, by the way, came very close to seeing when I was up north. Going to Poconos, I paid $5 plus a gallon. So you have to understand how gasoline gets priced. There is not a direct correlation between Russia not, you know, shutting off that country and not shipping oil. There's no correlation there. There's probably
the president's, I have to disagree. The president's telling us that it's mom and pop gasoline owners who just are greedy and they don't lower the price, right? I mean, he blasted them on the 4th of July. So what about greed?
In his penalty phase, he no more. I'm telling you what. Listen to me very carefully. He couldn't run a New York bottega. I'm telling you that right now. There's no way. He does not have the mental acuity, experience, or knowledge to operate a magazine shop. I'm telling you. There's absolutely no question. And the bottom line is, and maybe you can give me a better answer than I can give you, I don't think anybody knows who's pulling the strings in the White House.
Well, that's a good question.
Who's pulling the strings? You don't even know. At least
it is. And on the energy issue, there are lots of people involved in these decisions, but it's clearly not Joe Biden. And one of the difficult things is so much of what we know comes from the media doing their job. It's just the way, you know, democracy works, and we don't have a very good media.
No, we don't.
That's not a surprise to you. But it's a wonderful question to say in 2008 when Joe Biden was running against Barack Obama for the nomination at the end of the Bush administration, he ran on a pro-fossil fuel, pro-coal. He blasted other Democrats in Pennsylvania, talking about how they don't love coal the way I love coal. They're not going to fight for you. I'd love to know what happened in 14 years that now Joe Biden is completely anti-coal, anti-fossil fuel. The only way that becomes exposed is the media does their job, but they don't. They just turn their blind eye and move on to the next question. So you're absolutely right. He doesn't have the mental acuity, but he also doesn't have the intellectual consistency, and that's worthy of investigation.
Yeah. Well, he is a political beast. I'm telling you, the way he goes out and panders to unions, if somebody walked into his office and said, listen, we've got a new political group here that we think is very, very important. We want you to go out and pander to any and all female strip artists. We want you to get to know them and really tell them how they support the country. He'd be out there hugging strippers left and right. I've always thought he was just a good time Joe.
That's it.
And now he's the president, and he has
Larkin,
no idea.
Larkin, we're going to ask Rich Logis to say a special hello to Daniel Turner, and Rich, give him a question that we'll all remember.
Sure. Good morning. Hi, Daniel. Thanks for coming on, and good morning to our listeners. I'd like to nominate Dan to come back in the near future because I'm not going to be able to get to all the comments, Dan, I want to make from what you said. But I'm going to, just in a minute here, and I'm going to say it, and I guess I'll tease it, Michael. So maybe, Dan, you can come back in the next week or two. I have a solution to start bringing costs down that is so easy and brilliant and innovative, not a single person will adopt it. You ready to hear it?
Yes.
It's so brilliant, not one person will adopt it. And here's the solution. Just stop spending on non-necessities. That's it. Mark, when you lost your deal with China, you know why you really lost it? Welcome to capitalism. Now, Daniel, I'm not an anti-capitalist. I'm a business owner. I like voluntary commerce. I would prefer no other system. But it seems in America that we only like to talk about the good features of it. When a company or an industry, Dan, knows that a massive amount of spending is coming their way, are they going to raise or lower their prices? They're going to raise them, right?
Mm-hmm.
Welcome to capitalism. Now, not all industries can do that. For example, gas stations can't price. In other words, they can't say, oh, look at all the demand for gas. We'll charge $20 a gallon. Why can't they do that? They can't do that because of government, because of laws. So in principle, I agree with your point about
this idea that government is the miracle elixir for all problems. It's not. But unbridled capitalism isn't either. And Americans are now living through what that dark side of capitalism is. Because the people I know, Dan, who used to, the people I used to spend time with, they're predominantly Republican, because I noticed that Republicans tend to be more publicly vocal about inflation just because the opposition party is in office. If Trump and a Republican Congress were in office, Democrats would be talking about inflation. But the people I know personally who are Republican, they'll take a selfie at the gas station while filling up their BMW, and then in the next post, they're at a Palm Beach waterfront steakhouse. So my solution to start bringing costs down is stop spending on non-necessities. That's it. Not because I want businesses to suffer. I don't want that. But stop spending on non-necessities. And guess what will happen? Costs will come down. Oh, but Rich, I can't do that. I just want to bitch about inflation. Oh, okay. Gotcha. No problem. Until next week when we bitch about it again, right?
Well, Dan, I want to ask you something. If you were the guy in charge, what would you like to see done in 2 minutes? Tell us, what would you like to see happen?
Tell people stop spending on non-necessities. Sorry, Dan, I didn't mean to answer for you, but that's my answer, Mike. Stop spending on non-necessities.
What would you like to give us an answer, Dan? How are we going to end this nightmare? That's the question of questions.
Yeah. I don't think this nightmare is ending anytime soon.
Yes, I think it's going to be tough. But Dan, you were wonderful as always. And I hope to, I enjoy hearing you when you're on the radio. I enjoy hearing that you were on this and that show. And I enjoyed, you know, being with Rich, who I, you know, am a friend and listen to all the time. It's these kinds of shows that are able to speak. A lot of times I talk to people in the media, and I know many of them who say, Michael, these are all wonderful conversations, but they could be a little too controversial for our station to get involved with. So I hate to say it, a lot of that stuff falls on your doorstep. We can't, because we have so many people and advertisers who could go away from us, punish us, because we're not agreeing with them 100%. This is really becoming a crazy America, and something has to be done. I hope that we'll all be able to ask a lot more questions of the people running for office for the midterms than we ever did in political history in the USA. If we don't ask the questions of them now, they're not going to answer anything once they get sworn into office. Dan, I want to say thank you for being with us again today. We will have a copy of today's broadcast up on the site in a few hours. We'll email it out to all of our supporters and people who are on our list. And Dan, I hope we're going to see you very soon, because Rich has a lot to ask you. So do all of us. And until we speak to each other, may God bless you. May God bless all of your family and friends. Look for and speak up in support of Buy American Made. Thank you.